Now it's time for another public poetry announcement brought to you by the Center for Poetry at Michigan State University's Residential College in the Arts and Humanities. Joining me now is Diane Wachowski, a native of Southern California who until recently was the poet in residence at Michigan State University. She lives in East Lansing where she continues to write and teach poetry. And she's published more than 40 volumes of poems. Diane, welcome to Current State.
Thank you.
Now, I have to confess to our listeners here a little bit of personal bias. Diane, I've known you since 1999.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. It's been a while, huh? Now, you came to Michigan in the late 70s to work at MSU, which was kind of unusual for a poet of your stature. Can you speak a little bit about how that move changed and informed your poetry?
Oh, I don't think I ever thought I'd wind up in the Midwest because I'm a California girl born in... raised in Southern California, studied at Berkeley in Northern California, then went to New York City, lived in New York the glorious decade of the 60s, and so the Midwest just didn't seem like where I would be. And I guess I believe in fate or destiny. When I was invited to come here, I came, and like the man who came to dinner, stayed.
You stayed forever. Now, in some of your poems, you mentioned that being in the Midwest has sort of obscured your work from view to some, maybe, critics and whatnot. And I think a lot of us were shocked when we took classes with you and learned that we had such a famous, well-known poet in our midst, sort of hidden away here in East Lansing. Can you tell us a little bit about maybe the impact that moving here had on your career?
It's hard to know what would be since it wasn't. But I guess if I'd lived in New York, I was very much a part of the mainstream until the late 70s after I moved here. And I think that living in the Midwest is not being in the middle of things. It's being on the fringe of things.
And a lot of your poetry deals with this sort of change in the landscape, I think, right? Writing more about maple leaves and maple trees than about the sun and the ocean. I mean, how does your poetry deal with such an incredible landscape change?
Well, my landscape will always be the Southern California landscape of the desert and the Pacific Ocean. And I think I really learned that when I moved to New York City, which is itself a great landscape, but I didn't become an urban poet. I just became someone who lived in the landscape of my imagination, and so it was very easy for me to bring it with me to the Midwest. And I still believe that when I look out my back yard through the oak trees west, instead of student houses, which you can see in the wintertime, in the summertime, I believe that, you know, just a little bit further is the Pacific Ocean. It's what's there.
Now, what drew you to poetry? What is it about words? What do they do that, what kind of magic do they bring that's not possible in other forms?
I was a silent child. And I'm still a silent person. If you know me socially, I'm usually standing in the corner watching silently. And so language for me is precious and wonderful. And I need to write it down in order to be able to speak it. I don't have, as you can tell listening to me right now, very much spontaneity.
Were you surprised at the success over your career? I'm thinking, you know, the William Carlos Williams Award, you know, looking at your bio on the Poetry Foundation website, it's just a catalog of people saying wonderful things about your work and the things you've invented.
I grew up thinking that I had something special that I wanted to say to the world, and so I felt as if when people started reading my poetry, that was what was supposed to be.
In your most recent book of poems, The Diamond Dog, there's an essay where you kind of give us a preview or a little history lesson in your work, and you say, in creating a personal mythology, poets can give themselves to bigger stories, imbuing them with greater intimacy or poignancy, using the small details of our everyday experiences. Now this, creating a personal mythology, this has been sort of your hallmark as a poet. Can you speak a little bit about how one makes oneself epic in a poem?
One reinvents oneself because if you're Diane Wachowski, you're very plain looking. You don't have any sparkling personality that anybody's interested in. You're smart, but not brilliant. So you're really invisible. But you're not the wonderful magic invisibility of the fairy tales where you can go anywhere and do anything and be heroic because you're invisible. So I guess for me, it just means that you turn yourself, at least for the moment of a poem, into a mythic character, a hero, a heroine, someone who lives the big life that you don't live in your real life.
And I understand you've brought a poem to read to us today.
I brought a poem called The Duchess Potatoes, which I think describes me, because Duchess Potatoes is a fancy way of serving mashed potatoes. The Duchess Potatoes. My people grew potatoes. My hair is lanky and split-edged and dishwater blonde. My teeth are strong but yellowish. I have little eyes. I am fleshy without muscles. My energy is thin and sharp like gravy. But I crawl into bed as if I were pulling a counter of rubies over me, dream past all my lower class barbed wire, walk down the street in a silk glove, try to scrub myself to an aristocratic bone, and always come back to the faded colors, lumpy shape. You wonder why I refuse to type well, like my mother, to iron and mend clothes, like my grandmother. Am offended by your boorish father, whose only virtue is that he's tended a machine faithfully for 35 years and supported your beautiful mother, her strange children. He is a ghost of the peasant in me, of ugly linoleum floors and a starchy diet, and I, peasant, have no compassion for the lumps, the lumpy mashed potatoes that weren't beaten with enough butter and milk and made so fine, they could be called Duchess.
Thank you, Diane. We've been speaking with Diane Wachowski, retired poet in residence at Michigan State University, and for some of us, a continuing teacher, mentor, and friend. We're very lucky to have you, Diane. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.